KSCU Santa Clara presents. Robots Attack. Movies. TV. Video games. Comic books. Tech stuff. News. Music. Affiliates Geek. It's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook. Tweeting them at RobotsAttackMe. Emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack. I am Joe, and with me, as always, Caleb.
Good evening, everyone.
And Super Jason.
Hello.
Alrighty. We are the one and only geek-centric talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. Tonight, we're going to entertain you with geek knowledge from all across the board. There's a strange clicking noise in my headphones. You guys hear that?
No.
Wait. A little bit. No,
yeah, there it is. That's weird. Anyways.
Yeah, that is weird.
Hopefully it's not going out over the air.
Probably is. We'll have to fix that in post, or not post, but while the song's playing or something.
Yes.
Anyway, yes, we are the one and only Geek Central Talk Show, and we got a good show for you tonight. We're going to bring you some geek news. We're going to bring you some Caleb's Corner, I assume?
Yes.
All right. And, you know, there was this big little release from Sony. Oh, I don't know, the PS4. Maybe we'll hit that later on in the core.
Yes. That's that new indie Kickstarter project, right?
Yeah, I think so.
A lot of Kickstarter stuff happening these days.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I agree. and maybe we'll also talk about some PlayStation games that we've enjoyed over the years as well to go along with the topic. So moving on from that, how have you gentlemen been?
Not too shabby. Been keeping on. Still trying to maintain a gainful employment. I actually got our taxes back too. That was not as much fun as I was hoping it would be.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
It's never fun when you owe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Apparently, I did when I filled out my tax forms at the beginning of last year.
You claimed 14 children, didn't you?
No,
just 13.
12. Come on, guys, let's not exaggerate.
Okay,
about a dozen.
Yep, around a dozen. Yeah, apparently I didn't quite fill that out correctly or something, and no fun.
Dang.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's never good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. That's the fun part about claiming zero, like, every single time. And it's like, you always get money back. It's maybe not the wisest investment decision, but still, it's fun getting the money back.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So did you do anything fun since last we spoke? You recently beat the original Assassin's Creed, right?
Yes, I did finish the original Assassin's Creed, which is...
wasn't fun?
No, that was actually pretty good.
Oh, okay.
The ending was a little bit confusing. I was like, what? I'm not sure how this connects to what all else is going on. It's like it's like they're trying to drop a mystery on you, but it's a little bit too mysterious in some ways. Like I remember like seeing some hints of the things in the game, but not enough to like put it together.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like, huh. Well, it's interesting, and I think I know where they're going to go with it, but other than that, I was just kind of like,
Maybe secret missions that you missed or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe. I'm sure there's probably, you know, go back into the Animus, there's probably something to do, but I was just kind of like, just sort of looking at it. I was kind of wandering around the room going, now what?
Ah. It's a good place to be.
Yeah. So how about you, Jason?
I started out this week with a ton of drama at work, and
Yay!
Yeah, it's always great, right?
Everyone loves that.
Yeah, I'll try not to make this into a giant story, but... Okay, on Thursday of last week, 1 week from today in the past... It was my turn to clean up the break room, and it revolves around all the people at my work, so I didn't have really any problem with that. But there's this big, really heavy table, and so it's always in the way of stuff, and you have to mop everything and whatnot. So I mop the one side of the table, and I proceed to like try and push the table to mop underneath it. And it kind of sticks, so I get a little bit lower on it, I push it, and this time it comes unstuck, like, all at once, and it slides, like, right into the wall.
Ooh.
Like, crashes hard. It doesn't destroy the wall or anything crazy like that, but a clock fell off the wall, and the wall is pretty flimsy, and so the other side of the wall, I guess something fell down, too. I never saw that. So... I end up just kind of shrugging off. The secretary from the office comes in, checks, see what's up. I explained everything to her. And, yeah, it ended up kind of interesting from there because I go home. Everything seemed fine. I come to work on Monday. And I end up getting the foreman come up to me and say, so what happened on Thursday? I heard you were, like, throwing chairs or something. I was like, wait, what?
yeah, definitely a confusion.
So yeah, apparently the secretary thought I just went berserk in the lunchroom.
That's
room.
Good.
So, awesome. Yeah, apparently the entire office all weekend thought that I just went completely berserk. And the way that they rationalized it was that I just hated cleaning that much. It was like, I didn't know even how to respond to it because I didn't have anything to do with chairs other than like nice, neatly stacking them outside of the break room. So I don't know where the throwing chairs thing came from. And on top of that, I actually explained what happened to the secretary. So I don't know how that got confused. But anyway, apparently she decided that it was really important that she call up, like, all of the people from the office that weren't there, including the owner of the company.
Oh.
It was like, so not only do I get the foreman, like, trying to sensitively, like, talk me through this entire thing, because he knew this completely sounded weird. But... later in the day, I end up having the owner come up to me, and he was, like, dead serious. I thought, oh, man, this is going to be problems. Because he walks up to me and says, so I hear you were throwing chairs. It's like, I don't even know where the chairs came from. And I didn't say this out loud because obviously I was trying to be as, like, even-keeled and sensitive as possible. But in my mind, I'm thinking, like, I don't know where the chairs thing came from. And on top of that, what sort of weird, like, mutability do I have that I throw chairs around and they magically end up in a nice stack outside of the room? So... I'm completely confused, but I'm trying to just be as professional as possible, explain everything. I'm pretty sure I let an eye roll here and there because, I was mystified. So it ended up not becoming a huge thing or anything, but that conversation ended up wrapping up like, yeah, that needs to never happen again. It was like, okay, I'm... Yes, sir. So, yeah, I ended up kind of paranoid for the first chunk of the week that, oh, great, now everybody in the entire company thinks that I'm insane
Some
or something.
Wild, crazy throwing chair guy or something.
But luckily, all of the people out on the floor pretty much dismissed it. Like, yeah, the secretary's crazy. So,
well, at least you're not
alone.
That was
comforting. I'm still not sure the owner of the company thinks that, but and he's kind of the important one in that entire thing.
Yeah,
true.
But yeah. So yeah, that was the drama in my week.
Yeah, that one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Did you happen to do anything fun to sort of balance
it? I played a little bit of Dead Space, and I'm still absolutely loving that. And you had mentioned how interesting it is, the differences between the demo and the actual, like, once you're going through it, once you get catch up with a demo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's really weird. It's yeah. Like, it's almost like they construct the demo like a full year before the game or something like that. Yeah.
I would actually believe that, because it's like they're probably doing like, okay, complete one section, get it as good as you can, and then we'll make that the demo, and then we'll go from there. Because like they even say at the beginning, gameplay and artwork will change potentially as a result
of
this.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, all the same stuff is there eventually, but it's still just like yeah. completely in different places, and yeah, it's still very cool. I'm very happy with the game still. And as predicted, and playing it on insane hard mode with certain scenes has been absolutely insane hard, but I enjoy that. So
there you go. I've heard very good things about that game. I am looking forward to being out of debt and able to purchase it.
Yeah, I know, it's too bad because they were having some sales on it recently. So
yeah,
but I'm sure that'll happen again.
Oh yeah. And honestly, anytime these where it's mainly the single player experience,
mm-hmm.
it seems like they end up getting a pretty deep discount within a month or so anyway. So
yeah. Yeah, I'm not too concerned. It's just like, oh, but I want to be playing all the rest of you guys right now. That'd be fun.
Yeah, but. Missing out on the conversations and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something that you won't miss out on.
Oh.
If did you know that you can listen to KSU on your smartphone? Just download a mobile Shoutcast app such as TuneWiki, Shoutcast Radio, TuneIn Radio, they wrote this in here, or Winamp, and search for our internet stream.
There you go.
So, I think we should move on to new releases. What do you gents think?
I think that's a great idea.
That'll do me just fine.
Well, I shall start things off with what's coming out in the theater this week. We've got 11 Flowers. We've got Bless Me Ultima. We've got Caesar Must Die. We've got Dark Skies. We've got Fire in the Blood.
Okay.
We've got Inescapable, Red Flag, Rubberneck, and finally Snitch.
Dang. Wow. Prolific.
Yeah.
Very good then. Well, if that doesn't tickle your fancy, maybe you need to hit yourself up over at the...
maybe you need a new fancy.
Possibly.
That's true.
Or you need to hit yourself over to your local DVD/Blu-ray supplier and pick up Argo on Blu-ray and DVD. Based on true events, this thriller is set in the midst of the Iranian Revolution in 1979. Six embassy staff are trapped, but only one is on way out. Interesting, possibly. Ben Affleck. Battlestar Galactica, Blood and Chrome, Blu-ray and DVD. Then there's Highlander 2, Renegade Edition, on Blu-ray and DVD. Then over to Monster Squad, on Blu-ray and DVD. Skyfall, also hits Blu-ray and DVD. And then Top Gun comes to Blu-ray.
Nice. All right, if none of those were terribly interesting for you, we have video games. Crysis 3 hit all the major platforms. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Yes, that is a word. Then there's Assassin's Creed 3 DLC, The Tyranny of King Washington. We have March of the Eagles for the PC. Generation of Chaos, Pandora's Reflection for the PSP, you know, just in case you still have one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Capcom Arcade Cabinet for the arcade and PSN. Serious Sam Double D XXL arcade for the 360. And that'll do it for video games.
It's a lot of repeated letters for that game.
Yeah. That is. All right, over in Comic Booklandia, there is Sword of Sorcery, number 5. which is a reboot of an old series, which is actually pretty good from what I hear. Justice League America, number one. Over on Marvel, we got Nova, number one, part of their new Now line.
Now.
Mm. Then there's Savage Wolverine, number two. Now. Yep. Over on the indie side, Saga, number 10. Hollows, number 3 of 4. Sam Keith art, worth a look. And then The Shadow, year one. This one's written by Matt Wagner, so that should be pretty awesome, I think. He's a good writer. Hopefully it'll be good. There you go.
Alrighty, so that's been all the new releases for this week and coming out and all that jazz. So after this music break, we'll come to the news. Would you, gents, like to tease the folks with any news stories?
Yeah, moon bases.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Moon base. Okay. Nice.
Courtesy of Newt Gingrich?
I don't know. I'm not sure how, maybe, I guess.
Oh, political humor.
Yep.
Old political humor.
Let's see. And I have a story about a device that will make it so your chances of losing your wallet and or your phone much smaller.
Hmm. Cool. Alrighty.
Add keys to that and I'm sold.
Ooh. It has a keyring slot.
Nice. Sold. I don't even know what it is.
But you'll find out.
You'll find out. Alrighty, well, before we get to that music break, I'm going to have Caleb tell you how you can participate on the show, because like we say every week, we love it when you do.
That's right. You can find us on Facebook. Do a search for Robots Attack, two words. And then we should be your first hit on there. Or you can find us on Twitter, Robots Attack Me. And if both of those don't quite get you and you want a little old school, go to robots. You can hit us at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. That is our primary account. And if you just don't have paper to write that all down with, just remember robotsattack.me. That is our website that has links to our Facebook page, our Twitter account, and our email address, plus archived episodes of our show. And you can leave us comments and other cool things there as well.
Alrighty. We are Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show on KSU Santa Clara. We'll be right back after this quick music break.
Woohoo!
After these messages.
News.
Alrighty. So I teased you with something that will allow you to keep track of your phone and keep track of your wallet. Well, it's a brilliant little device that's been crowdfunded. It's called the Tracker. Not the most original name, I realize, but the track initial R is only $19, and it's operates off of Bluetooth, so which has an effective range of around 30 feet, or okay. 10 meters for those who were into that. A little bit less than 10, but that's math, and I'm not prepared to do that right now. And it's a little wafer that has the Bluetooth tag in it and a couple batteries, and then you pair it to your phone and with their free app. And if your wallet gets close to the outside range of the Bluetooth connection, it will ping your phone saying, "Hey, you're walking away from me." Huh. And if your phone walks away from your wallet, the phone will ping, "Hey, I'm getting far away from the wallet." So it's like it's a double, and if you're looking for it in the dark, like you have your phone, but you can't find your wallet, you can have it ping, and it will beep. The card will beep at you. So it's pretty cool, and at $19, it's a not unreasonable price for a device like that. They are currently doing their crowdfunding through Indiegogo.
Okay.
There's 5 days left on their campaign. If that sounds interesting to you, the one thing that is kind of cool about their when I was checking out their campaign site is that they have reached the point where they will actually do Android support at the launch, because it started out as an iOS only app and device, and then they have now accrued enough funding that they can move on to doing a iOS, Android simultaneous launch.
Okay.
We'll also compatible with Android with Bluetooth 4.0, which will extend its battery life as well. So,
sounds pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. One last thing that I think is pretty cool about this is that it will, if you do happen to get out of range, the app will take a GPS snapshot of where you are when that happens, so you'll have a general idea of where it could be when you come back to look for it.
Oh, geez. All sorts of cool stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the slightly less attainable for you and I, 3D printed moon bases.
Sweet.
Hey.
Okay. Nowadays, they're 3D printing like everything that you can think of. And to add on to that, the European Space Agency, along with a company called... Foster and Partners and Monolite UK have teamed up in deadly trio of companies making 3D printed moon bases.
Huh, cool.
Anyway, the kind of neat thing is the technology isn't just like spitting out stuff, even though it's kind of neat as far as like making something that prints on such a huge scale.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is you save on materials and ingredients up on the moon because the moon is actually made of kind of natural concrete.
Okay. Yeah.
And so the trick of it is getting water to stick in it long enough without it like drying out
mm-hmm.
to turn it into something useful. And this thing... these three companies have figured out how to do it. It's basically injecting the moisture into this concrete material.
All right.
And then by doing that repeatedly, mm-hmm. you end up with entire structures, which it's not made... so far, the idea is to not make it so it's the livable habitat. It's all of the stuff that provides safety and substructure so you can build onto it more easily. So the entire idea is to throw a bunch of robots up on the moon that are collecting the rocks, crushing them up into the stuff, feeding them into this machine, and then it can be doing all of this stuff. So you can have structures jump-started from home.
And that would be good for the space program because getting off this planet is pretty darned expensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Every extra pound of stuff you carry with you is like several hundred thousand dollars of fuel that's right. burned up.
The only sticking point to me is that one of the most expensive things that you can throw up there is liquids, aka water, which is
right.
what you need for doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I mean, it's way better than like throwing a bunch of steel up there and whatnot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and if your building material is more or less available on site, then you have one less thing to go and find and or bring back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really neat. I'll try and throw links on to the Facebook page so you guys all out there in Radioland can check it out. But it prints out really neat like honeycomb structures. And if you can imagine a honeycomb like standing straight up, except like extending the honeycomb maybe 2 feet wide, something like that.
All right.
And of course, made of concrete.
Naturally.
but yeah, it's pretty neat stuff. Check it out.
Very cool.
Yeah, and as Super Jason mentioned, we post all of the links to our stories on our Facebook page. Speaking of...
when technology allows.
Yeah.
details.
Well, from moon bases to teddy bears, guard gets 2 years in prison for failing to protect Belarus from teddy bears.
Say what?
That's right, from NBC News. We have a Belarusian border guard was sentenced to 2 years in prison Monday for failing to report a border crossing by a Swedish plane that parachuted hundreds of teddy bears into the country carrying pro-democracy protest messages.
Aha.
The sentence was announced by the Belarusian Supreme Court, which said the unnamed officer would be sent to a maximum security facility. Associated Press and Charter 97, an independent news service opposed to the government of dictator Alexander Lukashenko, also reported the announcement. The strife over the stuffies eventually escalated into a diplomatic war between Belarus, a former Soviet republic of about 10 million, and Sweden. Each nation expelled the other's ambassador after the parachute drop on July 4th, which is also Belarus Independence Day. Sweden has long been open about its desire to see democracy take root in Belarus. Belarus didn't publicly acknowledge the airdrop until 2 weeks later, when Lukashenko criticized the military for allowing the plane to enter Belarusian airspace. He also fired the foreign minister and the generals in charge of air defense and the border patrol. Authorities also arrested two civilians, a journalism student who put pictures of the teddy bears on his website, and a property manager who offered an apartment to the plane's Swedish pilots, two of four pro-democracy advertising agents who dreamed up the stunt. They told NBC News last year that they hoped the diplomatic spat would increase pressure on Lukashenko. So there you have it, teddy bears spreading the word of democracy throughout the world.
There you go. Well, if teddy bears aren't falling out of the sky, isn't strange enough for you, how about a goldfish found in Lake Tahoe, nearly 1.5 feet long and 4.2 pounds?
I've heard about goldfish doing that. Okay, but go on. This sounds kind of neat.
Yeah, during a survey, they found there were about 15 other goldfish. The environmental scientist Sudeep Chandra of the University of Nevada, Reno, said they are. It's like an indication that they are schooling and spawning.
Oh, wow.
The goldfish are an invasive species that could potentially interfere with the Lake Tahoe ecosystem. It's unclear whether these fish were introduced as fully grown adults or whether they were still small. But even a small creature can have a big impact if there is enough of them. Just ask a nanite if you can find one. it's just kind of one of those... It just... Hilarious. So these giant goldfish are someone added them to Lake Tahoe, and now they got to figure out what to do with them.
Well, that's the thing too. I saw, this was probably like 10 years ago on some Nova special or something like that, that goldfish are this weird little creature just because they will grow to the size of their habitat. So that's half of the thing, is that it could be like some parents that are thinking, okay, well, we're done with Tahoe for the weekend and we can't really cart this goldfish back home with the kids. So, okay, we'll just put it in the water. What can it hurt?
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, these things grow like the size of a trout if they're allowed out in water big enough to support that.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of like catfish or koi in a way. They'll grow to the size of the environment they can sustain.
Yeah, and I never would have thought that little creature that all of our childhoods are filled with could become like a formidable fish.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently one of the reasons that they think this show that they're all showing up is kind of what you said. Parents go, oh, we're done with the fish. We don't kill it, so let's toss it in the water. Apparently, aquarium dumping is a problem in Lake Tahoe area,
I can imagine that.
Like then, apparently between 20% and 16%. Texas. Okay, so they've been trying to figure out like how does this work, and apparently in Texas they during a survey they found that 20% to 16% of fish keepers. Were dumping their unwanted fish into local lakes and reservoirs and stuff. It's just like, wow, that's just such a strange tactic to me, it seems. I mean, like, I understand why they do it. It makes logical sense, but just kind of like, but if, like, say you had a set of small tropical fish and you drop them into a lake or an ocean, it's like, that's not their natural habitat. They might survive, but what are they going to do?
Yeah, the goldfish are kind of rare, is that they're apparently like really adaptable too. So they're good at jumping in the water and fending for themselves pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, something tropical or something that requires salt water, I mean, it's going to have issues.
mm-hmm.
Just a wee bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to figure out some segue for this later, I guess. From gold to other elements like lithium and ions.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
You go to lithium, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, kind of a quiet upgrade to the entire lithium-ion battery industry was switching from cobalt to silicon. I know, really amazing news, but really important because, I mean, before it was like if one of these batteries found its way into the outside world, it could cause some major problems and and deaths.
Yeah. Yeah. Lithium is known for its ability to burn. And if you've seen any of the videos of when they do burn, it's a little bit frightening.
Well, I'll stay away from that one. I want to talk about it more, but I'm going to stick on topic. I'm going to act professional for once.
Hey.
Semi-professional.
You're getting paid for this?
Anyway. Well, yeah. So the switch from cobalt to silicon... It does have its downsides, is that silicon, or the cobalt, is really good for making these batteries.
Right.
And it's part of the reason why the entire lithium ion took off, because it makes really fast charging batteries that last way longer and whatnot. And silicon has its issues, because they replaced sheets of cobalt with sheets of silicon. Well, they're finding out that silicon ends up degrading way faster than the previous technology did.
Ah, bummer.
Which is half the reason why I'm cursing at my cell phone, I'm guessing, most of the time. Because it's less resilient to the residue that builds up on it from recharging. And they figured out kind of neat ways to have microchips regulate that. You extend the life as much as possible, but still a problem.
Right.
Well, researchers have kind of come across something that I thought, well, I would have never thought of. I guess that's why they're researchers. But
that's anyway, that's where they get paid the big bucks.
They're jumping on the nanotube bandwagon. I mean, I'm sure everybody's heard of carbon nanotubes being used for building supercomputers and blah, blah, blah. I can make a skateboard out of it. Anyway. So they figured out that they can make silicon nanotubes. And it ends up creating this same, like, really thin surface that you need with the lithium, but it doesn't end up having any of the problems with it degrading because it's, like, a large flat sheet that just gathers all of these particles like crazy. It ends up acting like a little tunnel that the energy can go through without clogging up.
Well, there you go.
So anyway, I thought that was a kind of nifty little bit of science, and I'm sure it'll get quietly plugged into our cell phones and whatnot without anybody ever noticing. Same. If I would have just mentioned that, since I had no idea about the silicon cobalt silicon switch.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Hmm. Batteries are made of tubes.
Yes.
It's a series of tubes, I tell you.
Hopefully soon they will be.
Seriously.
Everything will be made of a series of tubes. Yeah. All right, well, if you are just joining us, we are Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. Now from, see, teddy bears, goldfish, silicon, to ice cream.
Okay.
I'm with you. Okay. I'm with you.
So, not silicone.
But silicones. Silicone. Hey,
yeah. Although it doesn't have anything to do with that. this story from the SF Gate is Israel's Netanyahu freezes ice cream expenditures. All right. Following an Israeli newspaper scoop, the country's prime minister has frozen his annual ice cream budget.
Oh, geez.
Benjamin.
SF Gate brings the puns, and they bring them hard.
And I give him that voice. Benjamin Netanyahu's office on Sunday said once he was made aware of the state-financed contract issued to purchase ice cream from his favorite Jerusalem parlor, he ordered it stopped immediately. Netanyahu called the contract excessive and unacceptable.
Yeah, that sounds excessive.
Good on him for thinking of it.
The Israeli economic publication Catalyst published a list of items on the prime minister's annual expense budget, including $2,700 for ice cream.
Hmm.
Following the
publication. Wait,
wait. A lot of ice cream.
For how long?
That's annual expense budget. So
for a year.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I probably spend that much on ice cream every year.
Sure.
I'm pretty sure.
Following the publication, Israelis flocked to the Tudela ice cream shop. I apologize for butchering that, probably. Near the prime minister's residence to check out his alleged favorite flavors, pistachio and vanilla. The prime minister's office said the cost included hosting high-ranking officials at the official residence. Still, it offered a rare peek into the personal life of the private Netanyahu.
So that's about $7.40 per day. At $2,700.
That's cold stone right there. I mean.
Maybe. Who knows? So there you have it. We know he likes ice cream.
Pistachio ice cream, to be specific.
Yes, pistachio and vanilla.
That sounds pretty good.
I like pistachio ice cream.
I've got to make that trip to Israel.
There you go.
There you go. Jenna is listening, and she tweeted us that...
who?
Be nice. While working at Petco...
Where's her mic again?
You can't reach her mic now.
No!
I did that for you, Jen. She said that goldfish are dirty creatures. They need a gallon of water each, even when they're tiny, because of their waist.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. So that's another reason why dumping them into a large lake is probably not such a good idea.
All the other fish are like, have you seen that new guy?
Man, someone needs to leave a window open and a door, and maybe give him his own outhouse.
Somebody give him a plastic bag.
So from ice cream to...
To
can we keep this circle of life going? And
well, it's sort of backtracking a little bit because it'll go back to silicon.
Okay.
Oh.
This is our robot story, and it has to do with something near and dear to my heart, which is Legos.
Oh,
and
okay.
it's an expansion of the Mindstorms technology. Mindstorms, in case you don't know, is a really cool Lego-built, produced set of robotic building toys, elements.
Okay.
And their latest version is the NXT. And it is a really, really cool system. It has a lot, the processing brick, which houses all of the essential information, including Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's where all the cool things happen. It also has speakers and stuff. Mm. But what makes it sort
of the house, Newt Gingrich?
Tying it all back, dang. Man. That's Robots Attack for you. We tie it all together for your listening pleasure. Yes. I was about to say for your viewing pleasure, but that would be difficult since
they can't see
we're
us.
On the radio.
They can come to the window, I suppose.
That's true.
That's true. But couple guys, Adam Wolf, Matthew Becker, and let's see.
Wolf.
Becker.
And Wolf.
I'm sorry, Beckler.
Oh, that's not as cool.
Adam Wolf and Matthew Beckler decided to expand beyond the interface of the Mindstorms brick, which is solid.
That sounds like the Wolfster.
Yeah, yeah. Classic.
Classic Wolfster.
Classic. Mm-hmm. Now, Wolfler, I mean, he's not as cool.
No.
Yeah, so they work for an electronics kit business called Wayne and Lane, and they looked at the Lego brick and said it has a lot of cool capabilities. But what if we wanted a few more motors, or if you wanted to expand beyond what the brick could do? There wasn't really an expansion slot other than to get another brick, and the bricks are the really expensive part of what they did is they you know, because they're that kind of geek, they opened up their...
They're that kind of geek. I'm sorry, I had to...
They reverse engineered all of the protocols and ports of the Lego Mindstorms brick.
Again, classic Wolfster.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't expect anything less.
Yeah.
And they created
always neck deep in protocols.
Yep.
And they created a circuit which, and based on the Arduino prototype board system, which allows them to program their write their own programs using the Arduino based language, and have it connect into the other parts of the project, which allow them to do potentially more types of sensors with, because they can, because the Arduino is designed so it can accept expansion boards, okay. at least one. And if you can, you can add extra motor controllers or extra sensor connections to it. So you could potentially make something bigger and, well, potentially, yeah, bigger, but...
bigger, stronger, faster.
Potentially more customizable than the Lego's microcontroller.
It's just a matter of time before they throw a Kinect on this thing and it starts taking over the world, right?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Their schematics and code are freely available because they believe in open source and how to, and like, you know, say you can't afford a Mindstorms brick, but you can afford like other pieces around the Mindstorm system. You could still build a robot with somewhat simplified or reduced instruction sets and stuff. So you could interact with other devices, but you don't have to keep buying like tons and tons of the bricks.
Okay.
The idea of it was also to kind of expand educational purposes of the devices. I mean, the robot kit itself is already pretty awesome educationally. And they said, you know, what if we can push it further? Like, you want to teach an electronics class teach electronics as well as robotics at the same time. Mm-hmm. So they...
Are you mad?
I know.
That's something the Wolfster would do.
Classic Wolfster.
So it's just kind of... Lego had a very cool idea, and it's a very elegant system. And they said, "Well, what else can we do with this idea?" And they just built on it and made it cooler. So, or at least different. This is sort of the hacker's version of the other thing, where it's got a lot more ways you can mess with it, fiddle with it, build your own. But it's not going to be nearly as fiddly as. But it's much more fiddly. You'd have to troubleshoot the circuits. You blow a capacitor. Like, well, how do you fix it? Do you have the right resistance on this circuit? Okay. Things like that.
I run into that all the time.
I do.
Mm-hmm. So there you go, life expanding cool things. Expand your minds, people. That's all I got
to
say about.
Nah, I got you to do that. So
I'm here to help.
And the Wolfster.
And the classic Wolfster. Well, if that was too much for you, I'm going to dumb it down for you with our last news story. 9/11 call asking for cigarettes leads to arrest. In Granbury, Texas, a Texas woman wanted to make sheriff deputies the butt of a joke, but she picked the wrong audience when she called 9/11 to have cigarettes delivered to her home.
Don't mess with Texas, ladies yeah. and gentlemen.
Hood County Sheriff's Lieutenant Kathy Jividen says the 48-year-old woman was very intoxicated. There's a sugar.
Okay.
When she requested the special delivery on February 11th, Jividen says the caller instead received a visit from two deputies and was arrested. She was charged with a misdemeanor count of abuse of 911. She was later released from the Hood County Jail on a $1,000 bond.
Dang.
So, yeah, don't do stupid stuff like that, I guess. Already,
yeah. That's, why would you call 911 to get cigarettes delivered? I'm sure the state she was found in has something to do with that. But
yeah.
Wow,
yeah. Anyway, that's gonna do it for our news portion of Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Centric talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound. We're gonna take another music break and come back with Caleb's Corner. Caleb, would you like to tease the folks of what your corner's gonna be about tonight?
Well, it's somewhat related to the robot story today, because it's an educational thing, but it's another inspirational educational thing.
All right.
Inspire educational.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Classic Wolfster.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. It's like edutainment.
There you go.
There you go. I like it.
Except less teening.
More earnational or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Anyway, we're Robots Attack. We'll be back after this music break.
And now, it's time for K-Lux Corner.
Yay! Indeed, yay. This is my section, K-Lux Corner, where I get to talk about something I think is really cool. And I got this wicked cool story off of Polygon. And the story is about 7-year-old Zora Ball, who has built her own mobile video game. She used it. She built it using a program.
Wait, like a PSP, or what are you talking about here?
I think it's like a phone based game. So like something.
Okay.
It's probably a web based something or other. I guess I haven't had a chance to play with it myself.
It's something a kid did. I mean.
So she built the game using a program.
I'm sorry if you're out there, Zora. My kid.
I get it.
I didn't even mean to do that.
You have something to bring back to your flotilla now. Anyways, the game is built in a programming language called Bootstrap. And I did a little
bootstrap,
research.
Bootstrap. Pirates of the Caribbean fan out there was just dying for someone else to do that, so I had to do it for them.
Mm-hmm. Bootstrap is a programming language that is taught as part of the curriculum, algebra curriculum, I should say, usually to 12 to 16-year-olds.
Okay. And this Zora was 7, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so she's a smart cookie. She also debuted her creation at the Bootstrap Expo at the University of Pennsylvania this last December. And when taking questions that were asked, she was able to rework or reconfigure part of her application on the spot. So like she knows it well enough that she can.
Write
code on the fly on stage with everyone watching and have it still work, which is a testament to her skill and also to the language that it's nice and robust to make it easy to learn and easy to work with.
Okay. Bootstrappable, if
yes.
you will.
Yes. the foundation that that helped her learn this it runs an after school program. And they're called the Foundation for the Advancement of Technology in Education, or FATE, as in change your
there
fate.
There we go.
Ah.
FATE has brought you here, little girl, to learn Bootstrap.
It's much better than my acronym from last week. I can't even remember that one. It was so lame.
This group is a nonprofit Philadelphia organization that teaches these kids how to use this programming language to make a video game, but in the process of doing that, they also are teaching them the fundamentals of programming, which is problem solving.
But
and
more importantly, you're bringing joy to the world, which is, I mean,
also very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and teaching algebraic concepts as well as programming thought process. So this is sort of the project-oriented education, I guess you can call it, where it's like, we'll teach you how to do this thing so you can go off and do other cool things. And once you know how to think the patterns through, how to understand what the core concepts of programming are.
And then you can see the matrix.
You can see the matrix, and you can remake it in your own image. You can write your own programs. You can control your own destiny, so to speak. You know,
yeah,
you
become the spoon.
There is no spoon. Only try to see the truth. There is no spoon. But yeah, I thought it was just a really cool idea of like using games and programming to teach mathematical concepts, which are then become useful as potential job skills in the future, because it's a mindset rather than a language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the future of education right there. Just figure out how to make everything into a video game. Bam.
In fact, not to butt in on your corner, but there's someone here that agrees with you completely.
Oh yes,
what?
From the same site too. It's a quick little story, but I think it'll fit well into it. Obama extols the benefits of gaming. A passion for video games could be a good way to attract children to computer programming, President Barack Obama said in a recent Google Plus fireside hangout. In a group interview, President Obama said that it makes sense to introduce computer programming requirements in schools because children are interested in the internet and video games. Introducing them to programming early will also prepare them to be job ready after high school, especially if they do not plan to seek an additional four-year degree. Quote, part of what I'm trying to do here is make sure that we're working with high schools and school districts all across the country to make the high school experience relevant for young people, not all of whom are going to get four-year college degree or advanced degree, he said. Obama used Facebook creator Mark Zuckerberg as an example of someone who has been successful through self-taught programming, stating Zuckerberg told him he learned programming because he was interested in video games. Quote, there are a whole bunch of young people out there who I suspect, if in high school, are given the opportunity to figure that out. Here's how you can design your own games, but it requires you to know math and it requires you to know science. Or, you know, here's what a career in graphic design looks like. And we're going to start setting those programs in our high schools, not waiting till community college. Not only does it prepare young people who are not going to a four-year college to be job ready, but it also engages kids because they feel like, I get this, he explained. Obama noted that the pervasiveness of the internet in our world and young kids' interest in it could be a good way to start them down a career path with the necessary training early. So see, you're not alone. Even the president agrees with you, Caleb. He's in your corner.
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Hey. Or am I in his corner? Either way, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, if you start looking at Bootstrap and it's not quite your thing, you might consider looking at a language called Processing, which is a very visual programming language where it's like you instead of like putting in lines and lines and lines of code, hitting compile and waiting for something to happen, you can actually have it update almost live in a web page. So you can draw a circle with these coordinates and color it red, or whatever the code is for red. It will pop that onto your screen.
Plus, it's just fun to say.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Especially when you're pretending to be Gurr.
Processing! Processing! So there you go. I think that rounds out my corner.
Nice.
So, you know, go out, learn. Your life will only get better by knowing a little more.
Excellent.
Excellent.
And party on.
Yes.
Alrighty, I think it's time for some entertainment news.
Entertainment news.
Alrighty, Abrams talks Klingons, Carol Marcus. In a new interview with MTV, Abrams addresses two new additions to the rebooted series of Star Trek, the Nasty Klingons and the lovely Dr. Carol Marcus. Regarding the former, he confirms that the ridge-headed aliens will in fact be bad guys in the new film. Quote, their role in this is definitely that of adversary, says Abrams, and you'll see how they play out. Ooh. And I thought they were going to be friendly.
Worf is obviously not a part of this continuum.
Yeah. As far as Carol Marcus goes, the character who will be played by Alice Eve is traditionally thought of as a love interest for Captain Kirk, but Abrams says the film won't necessarily focus on that aspect of their relationship. Quote, he meets her fairly early on, and again, she plays a science officer, someone who is part of the adventure, says the director. It's very much an action-adventure movie, and once that gets going, it's a very difficult thing to park the story, so it's very difficult to do a romantic interlude. Her role is important. She wouldn't be in the movie otherwise.
Okay.
Going on to some other movie news. Christian Bale. You know, the guy who played Batman.
Is that your voice?
Yeah. See, Christian Bale to ascend Mount Everest. Oscar winner Christian Bale is reportedly in talks to star in Everest, a true life feature from Working Title and Universal. Although several
the sequel to K2.
It could be. Although several projects are looking to tackle the famed mountain, Balthazar Cormacur's film tells the 1996 story of two groups that attempted to reach Everest's summit and the disastrous events that followed. Cormacur directed last year's Contraband and the upcoming Two Guns, based on the graphic novel. So Batman might be climbing some mountains. And apparently, I didn't hear anything about this, but apparently there were some Toy Story 4 rumors on Twitter. They've been shot down, which doesn't shock me at all.
Nope.
According to, there was a tweet by a Colombian radio exec that Pixar had officially announced Toy Story 4, except that wasn't the case. that's not happening.
Colombian radio execs are like hardwired into Pixar. Most people don't know that.
They're just right there with them.
All over it.
Crossing my fingers, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this last story, because we're going to be talking about Sony and the PlayStation and all that, I figured why not let people know if they're interested. The PlayStation Network Gamers' Choice Awards 2013 nominee voting opened a couple of days ago. Sony is opening voting today on the nominees for the PlayStation Network Gamers' Choice Awards 2013, allowing PlayStation Network users to weigh in on 2012's best PlayStation Network games. So if you're interested in that, use your search engine of choice. Find the Sony Network online thingamadoodad and go vote for some stuff if you're interested in that sort of thing. All right. That's my entertainment news for you all. We're going to take another quick music break and then come back with some of our core topics of this little thing we mentioned earlier, the PlayStation 4, and some of our favorite PlayStation games.
Mm-hmm.
We are Robots Attack.
You are now entering the core. Enjoy your stay.
Alrighty, welcome to the core, where we're going to discuss the PlayStation 4. But before I get to that, ticket giveaways. Do you want free tickets to a concert? KSU has got you covered. Just listen in and you could win. To see which shows we're giving away tickets for, go to ksu.org and click on promotions. Alrighty, gentlemen.
Yeah.
We're back to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show. We're in the core and we are discussing the little thing called PlayStation 4 that was announced just yesterday.
Just yesterday.
Can you believe it?
It's about time.
It caught me off guard, but
yeah, until you mentioned it I was like, whoa, there's something. Sony's doing something.
Yeah, they announced, I believe it was early February, that they were going to have a big announcement about the future of PlayStation. They didn't come out and say we're going to announce the PS4, but everyone was like, PS4. This is probably going to be the PS4 announcement.
Mm-hmm.
So
probably a safe bet.
Yeah,
and they it was correct.
Right. Yeah.
So that's cool. Yeah, doing a little reading up on it. It sounds really interesting.
It's interesting to me just because the just from the tech side of things, they're definitely cramming through all the stuff to deliver on all of the things that we would expect. Like,
right,
all the graphics are a definite huge upgrade, and it looks like really expansive environments. And
yeah, they're claiming 2 teraflops of performance, so that's a lot of calculations per second.
But it's interesting too, just because
which means better reflections, better shadows, more responsive environments.
Yeah. But they also released pretty much all of the performance as far as what sort of components are going to go into it. And it's basically a PC. They haven't said anything about the specifics of the processor or anything like that, but they have said how many cores it'll have, how much RAM it has, its target processing power, all of that stuff.
Right.
But it's still kind of interesting because it's not like the most amazing PC ever or anything like that, which since the last PS3 had this entire air of mystery about it, like, oh, what is this new processor? And it'll be able to do all of these amazing things that you can't even compare it to a PC.
Right.
And so it's just interesting that they completely went, well, we'll just compare it to a PC.
Yeah. Which I think is actually fairly smart, because the processor that they made for the PS3 was very powerful, but it took them a good, year and a half, almost 2 years, before they really were having any games that really showed off what that processor could do.
Right. And they fixed a major thing, too, in this one, is that, okay, so you have this monster processor. If you have no RAM to back it up,
yeah,
it has 512 of RAM.
Yeah, that's... And half of that had to be devoted, to graphical...
Right.
So
you only had 256 for
that's
graphics
why
memory?
A lot of the I mean, I don't think they came out and they came out and said it specifically, but that's why a lot of Bethesda games got sort of butchered, because in a lot of those the games remembers every little thing you touched and dropped and door opened and if you've ever played like Oblivion or Skyrim or any of those games,
yeah.
All of that stuff in that giant world, like, the game remembers everything. So, and that all goes in RAM. So if half of that RAM is already eaten up for graphics, it kills things. So having, what was it, 8?
Yeah, it's going to be eight
gigs on this one.
It should help.
Yeah.
Well, it's dedicated graphics memory. It's not just 8 gigs. It's 8 gigs of dedicated graphics memory for, it looks like.
I'd heard shared, but I...
Yeah.
It's still 8 gigs is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than 512.
Yeah. But,
and a lot more than 256.
Yeah. I just wonder how quickly it'll get outclassed, you know?
Well, I think that that's where having a familiar architecture and easier developmental tools may actually help it last longer, because they don't have to work as hard to figure out how to make the processor do fancy things or use all the cores. They already know, you know.
Plus, a high end computer is always going to beat whatever console's out.
Yeah,
yeah. That's true.
I mean, there's no way to compete with it unless you made like a $3,000 console, which no one would buy.
Yeah, because then what you're making is essentially a dedicated gaming PC, and you're swapping out the parts anyway.
You're buying
so
an Apple. kidding. You can't take apart, you know.
You can't
buy
an Apple for that.
That's what I meant. You can't open it up and swap out parts
beyond
RAM. But
right.
But yeah, so.
And I think one thing that's kind of stood out to me, being the somewhat strange geek that I am, is that they changed the core processor technology, not just from the cell processor, but from the PowerPC based processors, which is what all of they've all been so far are custom. Like in the PS2, I think it was a custom one, and they've gone with a standard x86 based processor. So it's essentially going to be running,
which I'm sure makes Intel happy.
Intel and AMD, between the two of them, like, they're probably just salivating over this thing.
Yeah.
and since most of the stuff that makes games look really good is done in graphics processing, like, you wouldn't need as quote unquote large or powerful a processor on the CPU side to do all the really cool stuff. So it's potentially possible that they could actually put some power savings into that. And also, being an x86 processor, there's a lot of fabs, which are things that make processors. Like, they don't have to do extra crazy things to make them work. The yield on an x86 processor is pretty standard at this point. Mm. You know, it's not going to take too much more to make this like a really relatively inexpensive, like, in terms of like the pipeline, how to make it work that way. So, and which also explains why it's incompatible with every other game that they've made so far.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
But for now.
For now. Well, that's where the Gaikai acquisition, which is now known as what, PlayStation Cloud or Sony Cloud, something like that.
Yeah.
I'll have to look that up.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
They're going to have
all of the backwards games on there eventually is what they're trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. The PlayStation Cloud is what it's called. And they're going to, but what makes that kind of cool is that it's actually going to connect back to like the Vita, and they're hoping to push to cell phones and other such devices so that these traditionally like, you know, denigrated, like, oh, that's that portable gaming thing. You can't play real games on that. That will be changing because you can play, might be an older game, but you can play like a new game that was for your old school PlayStation.
What I think is telling about it though is that it was, they mention it as like a subnote instead of like play it up as like, oh, it's going to be miraculous. You're going to be able to do this and this and this. So to me, it says they might do it.
Well, I think they're downplaying it a little bit because the cloud is not 100% reliable.
Okay.
And yeah.
Sorry. I didn't mean to. I also wonder too, if since there's a lot of things that were left out of the announcement, but we've got GDC and E3 coming up. So I'm wondering too, if a lot of things are being held off to say there. So they didn't just
put
everything out, right. You know, and one shot and then
nothing to show at E3.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically all this was statistics with some eye candy and showing off the controller.
Yeah.
Which I thought is kind of interesting. It's like, okay, well, everybody at least wants to see like some idea of what the console is going to look like, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing that they've always played fairly well. Like, oh, wow, look at that thing. I mean, it always looks like a piece of sculpture in every incarnation. So
at least the very first version of it. Yeah. And to that point, Jen's saying that, There's scant on the product at this point, like what it actually will be, as opposed to, like, they have, this is the theory of what this product will be, but what is it? We don't know yet. It's inside this magical box. We'll unveil it later. So I suspect you're onto it. Something with like they'll actually show a device at E3.
Yeah, because they've come out and said it's releasing holiday of this year, so it's not like they can not have those things set down yet, you know, because they have to actually make them. So let's make that design. Sir, we only have a month to produce all these? No.
Well, and I mean, just from at least the speculation out there right now, what basic stuff is going to go on to the next Xbox. The PlayStation is going to have a definite advantage as far as that goes, because these are stock parts.
Yeah.
They'll be able to throw these things together like crazy. They're not going to have the problems where, oh, we can't get the amount delivered to the toy stores that we really want to deliver this time around, it seems like.
And that's where I think like that's where I was on the whole like pipeline of this device is going to be much tighter. They can actually like know, they can control it a lot better and not have as many problems. And it makes you very curious what the architecture of the next Xbox is going to be like, because it, you know, if it will take any nods, if it will have any of these kinds of things in it, also whether a more standardized piece of equipment.
Yeah. The big piece, the most interesting thing to me was the, I forget what they called it, but I think it was just like share or something like that. Where
the share button?
Yeah.
On the controller.
The share button on the controller. I mean, it's, That's a really cool idea, because, I mean, people are trying their hardest to share absolutely everything they do these days anyway. It's definitely a trend.
Yeah. Well, on that note of sharing, want to get your hands dirty, need something to do, or want to find a new hobby, want to get out and away from the indoors, looking to spend a few moments making something beautiful? On Mondays and Thursdays from 2 to 5 p.m., drop by and volunteer at SCU's Educational Garden, The Forge, located on the corner of Benton and Sherman Street. Get in touch with food, the outdoors, and great people. Open to all community members at the indicated times. You can contact The Forge at theforge@broncourbangardens.org. But yes, getting back to the idea of sharing, yeah, like you saw it in a few games where mm-hmm. you could post clips
right.
of, you know,
yeah,
the various matches and that sort of thing. And now they're just going like full bore.
Right.
Like,
it's going to be universal.
You could watch. Yeah. You can go in and watch your friend playing their game.
And then jump into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive what they're thinking or doing with it. And I really hope that they can pull it off because I think that'd be kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be curious to see how it all plays out.
Yeah.
Going back to the controller, what do you think of the design of it and everything? I mean,
I've always had both like a love and some major issues with that controller because it's, they definitely go for the aesthetic side of it. It looks cool having everything completely symmetrical and mm-hmm. and whatnot, but the fact is your hands don't really move like that. They don't prioritize the things you do that way. Mm-hmm. And to me, the Xbox is always going to have the smarter controller as far as usability. And I think that bears out with a lot of games. But I mean, obviously they're sticking with the controller that's, well, it's sold really well as far as the RPG type of games, and it's still going to be the standard for fighting games for a long time, I think.
Yeah.
If you're not pitching in the money to go for a full-on arcade stick, you're going to be wanting all of these fighter games on a PlayStation just because those buttons and that D-pad work about the best. So the redesign of the D-pad ends up kind of interesting to me because of that, because, I mean, you don't want to mess with that flow, you know?
Yeah.
So having an upgrade on the D-pad where it gives more functionality and maybe even feels better could make it so it's less responsive for other things, which I think is kind of what Microsoft ran into with theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that for whatever reason, that thing is just not the most accurate for just the straight coordinates for whatever reason.
Yeah, it is the one thing on that one that where you have an asymmetrical design, it ends up throwing off your mind having the D-pad there. Because you end up thinking, like, okay, it should be a certain direction, where your mind is really thinking like a slight diagonal, because it's where your thumb is sprouting from, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of think through how the D-pad is working in order to make it work correctly, which is not generally something you want to do on a video game system.
Not
and
ideally.
Then on top of that, the diagonals are worthless. They've been worthless on every single one of those controllers. You can't do a diagonal move worth anything on any of those.
Yeah.
I'm definitely, I want to hold one.
Yeah.
Like I like, at least from what it looks like, the thumbstick changed, because I do not like the thumbsticks on the PlayStation controller. They're like, what is it? The DualShock 3, they're like bubble top.
Yeah. So they're like mushrooms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I prefer the Xbox ones.
A little
ones.
Dish out of it.
Yeah. And it looks like these are a little more like that.
Yeah, so it looks like they made that little switch. And, of course, having the touchpad on it allows for all sorts of interesting things. I'm sure there's going to be a huge wave of games that try and add, like, oh, well, do this movement with the touchpad as a quick time event or mm-hmm. something like that. You know that's going to happen.
And almost everyone's going to hate it.
Yeah. But they actually put a headphone jack in it this time.
Uh-huh,
And then it has not like
it has a Wii speaker on it.
Yeah, well, but the I forget what it is, but it has that sensor bar
right.
that it reads.
Yeah, the move.
type of thing.
Okay, so it's got the six axis control, or
well, they didn't even say anything about that, which
that's true. I didn't think about that.
I think they're just replacing it with the move control now, so
that would make a bit degree more sense.
But it's not
yes and no to me. To me,
it's not getting rid of. It's not getting rid of the move controller though. Mm-hmm. Like.
You just can now use the standard remote as a move controller?
It has the same little illumination thing, so that it ends up hooking up to the move system.
I don't know if it operates exactly like a move controller, but it has, from what I remember, similar sort of function to it. There's like a sensor bar that it reads off of, and so...
Interesting.
It's kind of interesting just because it allows you to have more... sensory data going into the system as far as where your hands are moving compared to your body and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But to me, if it doesn't have the six axis, it eliminates a lot of the things that I think were completely underdeveloped with the last system in the first place. Like, it seems like there... I don't know. It always was really frustrating to me that they didn't figure out much better things to use those gyroscopes for a lot of the games. And whenever they were clever about it, it'd be clever for like 5 seconds and then you'd be tired of it. So
sort of like the grenades in Uncharted?
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what sort of priorities they put on all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be curious to see what they do with it, because the PlayStation like universe, I've gotten so far away from it that it's hard. It's kind of funny to think about even possibly going back into it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of interesting for me to think, too, just because what kept me away from it was the price tag for so long. And it's not like the Xbox was ever, like, amazingly inexpensive compared to it. It was just always enough that it was like, well, I mean, especially once you get one or the other, it's like, why spend that extra little chunk more? But
yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely going to have the jump on the game, it seems like, with people salivating on it by releasing all of this stuff really early. So
yeah, get some good buzz going for it soon.
Yeah, plus it's been mentioned too that now developers who've been working on next-gen games for years now can actually say it's coming to this system. You know, like before they haven't been able to say anything like, we've been working on this game, it's going to come up, but we can't say yet because none of the big boys have announced that what their systems are and everything like that.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But now PS4 has been announced. They can say it's coming to PS4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how Xbox responds to that, whether they will have any announcements before E3 that will kind of try and take some of the wind out of Sony's sails or not.
Yeah, I wondered that too.
Not quite intended.
Yeah,
because I believe the big things that are left are GDC and E3. And so, yeah, I don't know if they'll do a similar thing, a little announcement, and then some more stuff at E3. Or since Sony has made their announcement already, now they can kind of own all of E3 if they saved and announced, you know, made their big announcement there. But, you know, it's one of those PR things where it's like a total strategy. I'm sure they have a war room, quote unquote, and they're like, okay, if we did this, what
with
about
little
this?
Little chess pieces all over the place.
It's like the old World War II maps with them sliding pieces around the map.
Yeah, because I was watching the IGN live stream for the announcement, and Greg Miller brought up some points about, like, they didn't mention certain things that aren't, he thinks the reason why they didn't, one, you know, maybe they'll be talked about at E3 or later on, but the other thing is, like, they didn't mention certain stuff that isn't bad but could be taken bad. Like, if they made an announcement of, oh, now you have to pay for online, or this costs this now or something, where it's not a negative, but you could flip it into a negative. So all the things that they really talked about now are like the positive things, quote unquote. You know, like here's the new thing. This is what we want to do. Like, just talk about that stuff first. Get that in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can talk about some of the other things later on. Like, you're going to need to do this, or maybe it won't be able to do this, or, you know, that sorts of stuff. And
yeah,
I kind of agree. I think this was just, bam, here's PlayStation 4. Here's some cool stuff we really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Check
mm-hmm.
it out. Like,
yeah.
The only quote unquote negative thing that I can sort of see in this was the incompatibility with any previous PlayStation disc. You know,
that ability stopped ever since the original PS3 was released. Once they made the new models, they took that chip out, so you couldn't do that anyway.
Okay.
So I think for a lot of people that sort of went away, like, mm-hmm. it's still a negative, but I think
they've kind of gotten over it by now.
That's kind of the wave of the future now. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's not backwards compatible, which is going to be interesting, I think, for Xbox, because, I mean, the 360 was pretty much the original Xbox was somewhat of a successful, but
uh-huh.
their 360 put them on the map.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if they're going to try to do a similar thing where you can stream, you know, 360 games or something like that, because it would seem pretty bad to, like, dump that whole install base, you know?
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they all respond, because changing chip architecture for them would be a bit of a big deal, but at the same time, like, if they don't, it's going to make development for the next version of the Xbox even more expensive, because, you know, for the current 360, when they first dropped it was like two Power Macs slaved together to make to run the demos.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm sure the dev people wouldn't mind having a more homogeneous development environment where they just have a bunch of PCs instead of, all right, well, we got this room full of Power PC processors, and this one's for this group over here is the PlayStation group, and that one is okay, we just got to run the emulator on all of these pieces of hardware, and then we'll be fine.
There'll probably be a couple. We should probably get back to PlayStation, but
yeah.
This is last thing. There'll probably be a couple titles, though, with whatever the next Xbox, that they'll guarantee to work, like they did with the 360. I think it was like they guaranteed mm-hmm. that Halo 2 worked on it or something, like
uh-huh. right.
super big ones that, like, we don't want to piss people off too much. Like, you can still play these there, but
yeah,
it's like, you love this one, yeah, yeah, we know,
yeah,
yeah.
Black Ops 2 totally working. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah, I can't imagine them not having some way to play all of the games that you've already downloaded, you know?
Yeah,
the downloaded ones, yeah.
Online ones will be interesting to see what they do with that.
Yeah, they might have you, like, you know, might have to re-download the game, but then the patch would essentially make everything work again.
Yeah, and I mean that, of course, for both systems. And
yeah,
it's interesting that they haven't at least said that right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like that would be one of those things, like, okay, well, go nuts downloading your games now, because number one, money in our pockets.
Yeah.
And then number two, you're going to be able to throw it on the new one anyway, and you won't necessarily be able to do that with a disc. So I'm surprised that hasn't been announced from anybody yet.
I suspect that they're kind of skirting that with the streaming gaming part of the announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it'll be something, again, that they're saving for E3
yeah,
or something or other. But
they were saying that one of the demos was of a PS4 title being streamed to a Vita, and the Vita being used as a controller.
I think, yeah.
So,
like a Knack game.
Knack, yeah.
Knack.
Mm.
Which, I could, you know, if they can actually pull that off on a on the scale of all of their install base, that would be so that will probably solve their problems.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't really thought about that. Like, I was wondering what they were gonna do with the Vita for the next cycle, since it is such a weird bit of tech, and it like they've it seems like they've tried to use it as well as possible with the new system, and they've got some cool ideas, but
I think
having it be like a better version of the new controller, it's like a win hands down. It seems like a lot more people are going to want a Vita now.
Yeah, I think they were almost sort of like, you know, hedging their bets on it, like, okay, it's released the Vita. We really want to say, because, I mean, then they came out and said they've been working on the PlayStation 4 for like 5 years or something like that.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I'm guessing, like, the, you know, they put out the Vita and they're like, oh man, there's some things we really want to say that we can't, but you should, you know, like, it seems like not owning a Vita, if you own one and you plan on getting a PS4, you're probably going to be a happy camper, it seems like.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that touch strip on the DualShock 4 is kind of a
They said it's like the back touchpad
Right where I was going. It's like the PS4 controller, the DualShock 4 is essentially a Vita without the screen. To oversimplify what the comparison, but they're very, kind of like. You know,
I mean,
kind of swap
like
them.
There's little things that have stuck in my head from previous systems. Like,
Before you get to the things stuck in your head, if you are just joining us, we are Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM. We are discussing the PlayStation 4, which was announced yesterday, in our core topic. Continue, Super Jason.
Well, all right.
Please continue.
Well, okay. I'm sure there's a dedicated force out there of people like me, but I was one of the few people who got really excited about the Dreamcast. And
quite a few people that were very excited about the Dreamcast.
Right, and in a lot of ways it kind of flopped, but it still had a lot of really cool notions that I think they're still absorbing into industry now. I mean, having a modem built into it, that became standard for everything after that, and especially broadband. I mean, and that was the first one where you actually could plug a broadband thing onto it, and nobody had even thought about doing that. I think PlayStation did it maybe like 3 years later or something like
that. Yeah, when they went down to the PlayStation Slim, PlayStation 2 Slim, that's when it became a... No.
Well, they had an extra thing that you could attach
to the network protection pack, yeah.
But yeah, so completely ahead of its time. And the thing that always fascinated me was the memory card for that thing. You could get the more expensive memory card. And yeah, I don't think they'll ever have it where you like pull it out and it's like a little mini game like it was on that one, which I enjoyed the heck out of. Even though it was like totally... I don't know, like one of those little monster pet things or something like that. But
Tamagotchi.
Still, yeah, having that extra little screen down there, like I remember playing Code Veronica and it having the heartbeat on there. And it was like, oh, that's too cool. It's just way too cool. And they've been absorbing that into all of these systems ever since, it seems like. It's like... That's a really cool idea. They didn't have the tech to pull it off at the time, but I mean, heck, the new Wii, it's basically that.
I think that, like you said, the Dreamcast's biggest failing was that it was too soon.
Yeah,
it was really great ideas, but about, you know, 10 years too soon.
A little ahead of its time.
Just a little bit ahead of its time, and that's the innovator's dilemma, as they say. When you're too far ahead of the curve, Yeah, there's nothing to support you, so you fall. So you end up, you know, starving yourself, and your very cool product dies.
Yeah.
But
this
PS4 is going to be very interesting to see what comes out of how the others will respond to it, because it's going to be it's definitely set a new bar for what a next gen console is going to be like.
Yeah. I hadn't even thought about that really. I mean about the Vita, I feel way more comfortable buying a Vita now than I ever did before.
Yeah.
But it's funny too because it's a nice hook. Like, well, you have the Vita, and it's like the best tool for this. Like, I'm gonna want a PS4 if I get that. So,
yeah.
If you give a Jason a
Vita,
slippery
slope.
Right. Yeah.
Well, we did mention it, or I did tease it a little bit. Want to mention a few games to before we head out?
Yeah.
The night.
Sure. Well, okay, we'll start very far, like, with classic PS1. What about you, Jay?
Oh, PS1.
Caleb?
Yes, Caleb J.
For those who don't know, I have several nicknames. let's see. One of the ones
Half
that
of them are secret.
One of the games that I remember distinctly was Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
yep. Yeah, I think that one survived through the line. I mean,
yeah, that was one of the first like PS1 games that actually sat down and completed all the way through. It's like, whoa, this is really cool.
Yeah,
I remember I didn't get to finish that one, and it was because I was down to the last minute of the rental time, and it was just like, oh, I know I'm right next to the end. This is so frustrating. I gotta get... No, it's time. Blockbuster's gonna close.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Driving to Blockbuster.
How about you, Super Jason?
Okay. First one, easily Final Fantasy Tactics. That was my huge, huge one for that first system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I had Metal Gear on there. I'll mention then Resident Evil Director's Cut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the, you know, original Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cheesy as all heck.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, looking back on it, but
it's blood.
Yeah. What is this? You're the master of unlocking. but yeah, I mean, you
but
know.
At the same time, I was like the... That was the big one that brought fear into a video game.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
As cheesy as it was the first one to do that successfully.
Yeah. Dog breaking through the window.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Classic.
All right, so should we move on to PS2? Or was there another one you want to mention quickly?
Silent Hill.
Okay.
Yeah.
Solid choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm... That was my system for becoming a fanboy for Squaresoft. And so Tactics and Vagrant Story.
Yes, that was the other one I was thinking of, Vagrant Story. Yeah, that darn good game.
And Vagrant Story was that one that it was always tempting me back. Like, I got the PS2 and was like, oh, man, I sort of want to play Vagrant Story. And the graphics were amazing for the PS1.
Yes.
But after you got spoiled on the PS2, it was just like, oh man, I can't. I'm sorry, Vagrant Story. Yeah. I can't.
That's one I would like to see a nice HD remake of.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that hasn't happened yet, because that game pops up over and over and over again on like the cult favorite lists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because the other one that always does is Tactics, and they've sequeled the heck out of that one. So I'm really surprised that nobody's done anything with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll just mention Final Fantasy VII, and then we can move on to PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Because it's classic, but
oh, yours.
I don't need to go into details.
Yeah.
Let's see.
PS2, anything?
PS2. One of the big ones for me with the PS2 was... Jack and Daxter.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my big one too. That entire series. Yeah, I spent so much time playing those and unlocking all of the little, or finding all the little orbs and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first game series that I was complete completionist on. Like, mm-hmm. If they would have had achievements for that, I would have had every single one of them, trophy system, whatever heck you want to call it. But yeah, it way more addicted to that game series than anything up to that date.
Yeah, that one's solid. Yeah, she was the there's kind of their sibling game, which was Ratchet and Clank.
Thought that was, I have that on mine.
Yeah,
the second one of that one. Well, just the series in general. But yeah, mm-hmm. if I had to narrow it down, the second one is solid.
What else? I'll just say the game Tekken that 5? Forced me
yeah.
to actually buy the PS2 was when they came out with the Gran Turismo edition of it. As soon as I saw Gran Turismo with those at the time like killer graphics, I was like, okay, they got me. I'm doing it now. It's gonna hurt. It's gonna eat a paycheck, but I'm doing it.
Yeah, I have a GTA Vice City.
Yeah, yeah, Grand Theft Auto.
That's been my favorite GTA, hands down. Love the 80s stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. tons of personality.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting because that's like the selling points of both Ratchet and Clank and Jack and Daxter in my book.
Is all of the 80s stuff?
No, the personality.
Oh, okay. I was confused there for a second. I mean, true. Jack did have a goatee all through that. So.
Devil May Cry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Jen mentions Kingdom Hearts.
And no one cares what she thinks.
Oh, come on.
Kingdom Hearts, it's weird. Like, I really wanted to get into those, but for some reason, like, it never clicked right for me. There's something about seeing those Disney characters.
I know what it is. You're not a girl.
Oh, that's right.
There you go. Ding, ding. I am right.
Oh, man. I could let it spiral out of control from there, but I choose not to for once.
Our entire audience is left.
Right.
Yeah. Achievement unlocked.
Ah, jeez.
Audience gone. Reduced to zero. All likes on Facebook reduced to zero.
No. You're so close. I thought that the Kingdom Hearts game were pretty good. They were really just odd because they didn't feel like a traditional Square game, but they didn't. It was somewhere between like, the combat of Vagrant Story with a little bit, because like it was like, but instead of pausing action, like it was like a full motion all the time.
That's true. That was the beginning of that trend, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Like with the RPG that is live all the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm kidding.
Wait, I wasn't.
Send your email to superjason@gmail.com.
Although I didn't say as controversial things. So.
Well, anything else before we wrap up? I mean, out audience out there, definitely let us know what you think of both the PlayStation 4 and what have been some of your favorite mm-hmm. PlayStation games
right.
throughout the years.
Is there anything coming up on the PS4 that they've announced that you're super psyched about, or any old games that you are just really, really praying to whatever deity you pray to, be it Sony or whatnot, that they'll make that game for that system?
That Deep Down game looks very pretty.
Oh, okay.
Check it out if you... It's like, hey, you want to like literally play Dungeons & Dragons? Here you go.
That could be a selling point for some people.
Definitely. I would be kind of curious to see if with this new upgraded hardware, the Killzone game becomes less of a five-minute walk, loading, five, down a hallway, loading, down a hallway, yeah. loading, into a smooth gaming experience.
Yeah, they showed off a demo of that one, the Deep Down trailer and mm-hmm. an Infamous trailer. And
I'm curious about the Infamous game, because that was one of the few games where I was like, man, that makes me want to buy a PS3.
Right.
I really liked the idea behind that game, and the way it was designed, the look and feel of it was, like, I thought really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's always been weird with Killzone also. It's like the most beautiful, ugly game there is. So yeah, having a little bit of color in that was kind of an interesting choice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This one looks a little more colorful.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think there was a comment somewhere, I forget exactly, was like, hey, Killzone, where's the brown?
Interesting enough, even Gears of War has kind of gone that way with, like, the last, the newest one, Judgment. There's a lot more color in that one than I can remember seeing on the characters in a while.
It is okay. A prequel.
Yeah.
So.
There you go.
And on that note, an Xbox game ending the PlayStation 4 discussion. We are Robots Attack, one and only geek-centric talk show on KSCU Santa Clara. We want to thank you for tuning in. Hopefully you had a good time. We are here every Thursday, 7-ish to 9-ish, discussing all things geek. Caleb will quickly tell you how you can communicate with us, because we love it when you do.
That's right.
And
this is your opportunity to tell us what to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And we might do it.
It's true. On all accounts.
So yes, the best way to get in touch with us is online. Fancy that. You can hit us up on our Facebook page. Do a search for Robots Attack, two words. Or you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is Robots Attack Me. Or if you prefer email, our email account is robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And finally, links to all of the before mentioned Facebook, Twitter, and email are linked from our own webpage, robotsattack.me, which also has archived episodes of our shows. So if you want to find out other things we have talked about in the past, check it out if you feel so inclined.
Yeah, check out old us.
Yeah. It'll be awesome.
Alrighty, on behalf of myself, Caleb.
Woohoo.
Super Jason.
Yes.
We thank you again for listening and hope you have a great weekend and Friday and
all that good stuff.
All that good stuff.
Yeah.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Why not?
Raccoon. Veronica. Misto.